For those, most of you were here last week. For those of you who were not, and for those of you here who were, I still need to give this warning again. Many of you knew it's coming, but again, here's the warning. Today's sermon is still about money. So we talked about how last week, that makes people do that. It makes people get up and want to run out. And as I noted last week, though, the reason why we're doing these sermons about money is because the Bible has so much more to say than just put more money in the offering plate. That is such a minuscule amount of what the Bible has to offer. I pointed you to a source last week, a book online if you wanted to get it. It's free. Don't print it out unless you really want to, but you can read it online. It's over 200 pages, and it just lists the over 2,000 verses that the Bible gives about money and possessions. And so if the Bible talks about something for 2,000 verses, it's something we should probably include in our sermons, even if it makes us go and want to walk out when we hear the sermons on money. So we should still talk about these things, and because it's a lot more than just, hey, give more, because that's not what the sermon's about. It's about, right now, is just some of the broad overview principles that I see in the scriptures about money, and then we're going to skip money for the next three Sundays, and we're going to go back to money for a little while, but those sermons won't be about giving either. They'll be about other things about money. They'll be about what the Bible says, how we should handle it, and things such as that. Last week, I noted that Jesus spoke more about money than he did heaven or hell. And while heaven or hell is more important than money, if Jesus spoke more about it, then it's something we should not be so afraid of. Because money is a spiritual issue. It's spiritual warfare. How we handle any resource that God gives us is a matter of spiritual battles and spiritual warfare. And far too often in today's society, we're losing that spiritual battle. Far too often, I see people who are just losing that fight. And we have to remember that money is not the only spiritual issue, even though it's a spiritual issue, because we know that Jesus has won the war, but until he comes back again, a lot of those battles are still raging. Like, the war is done, but the kind of armies are being rebels and fighting little skirmishes anyway, even though they've already lost. But so we're still fighting these spiritual battles, such as how we handle our money. And because of that, we need to be conscious about how we use our money, especially if the Bible talks about it so often. We need a new kind of normal, not a normal that's losing the battle, but a normal that recognizes what the Bible says about how to use it and how to handle it and what to do with it, and a normal that takes that in our hands. Society might be running around like chickens with their heads cut off when it comes to money, but Christians should not be. Christians are supposed to look and act different than society, and this is one of the areas that they should as well. And it's not that Christians are supposed to be rich. Rich or poor, you can still follow the advice in the Bible about dealing with money. It doesn't mean you have to be rich. It doesn't mean you're supposed to be rich, because I've seen plenty of very good Christians be poor. It's not a rich or poor thing, but it's a how you handle what you have thing and what you do with what you have issue. Because money is a component of discipleship. It's not a replacement for all of discipleship, but it is a piece of it. How you use your resources, your tools, your facilities, your hands, even your money, how you use anything, how you use your time, how you use your clothes, how you use your car, all of that is how you disciple yourself. How you do anything in life is how you be a disciple of Jesus or not. Everything about life is included with your walk with Christ, and therefore anything you do is a spiritual issue, and therefore money is as well. But this area of finances, and money in particular, is kind of an interesting area because it hits really close to home when you talk about it. It's the most tangible area where we really feel and see what our spiritual lives are doing. It's where we've got a paper trail with what we're doing with our spiritual lives. If everything is our spiritual lives, where there's paper trails are where it kind of reveals what we're doing with our spiritual lives. And therefore, money kind of does that for us. Money, as I said last week, also magnifies what's inside of our hearts. You give a jerk $1 billion, there are $1 billion worth of a jerk, and if you give a righteous man $1 billion, it's going to be a righteous with $1 billion. And so it magnifies what's in our hearts. It gives power to whatever is actually going on inside of our souls. And I think that's why the Bible talks about it so much, because it can give life to whatever is inside of us and give power to it. And so I think I've done enough recapitulating last week's sermon. Let's move on to some new principles that I think the Bible reveals about money. And the first one for today, again, using the fill-in-the-blank option that we tried last week, so no one commented on it. Let me know if you like it or hate it or really want to keep fill-in-the-blank stuff in the sermon notes. In the sermon notes, the first thing for today is money expands and limits our options. So here's a verse that's really important to take in. I think it reveals a lot about this money issue. Proverbs 22:7 says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. And that's a pretty serious statement to make. If the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. It's saying someone who has monetary resources rules, and someone who borrows and goes into debt is a slave. Debt creates a master-slave relationship. It really does. And it makes sense because what happens when you borrow money, you put down part of your resources as collateral. So whatever those resources are, they're now in bondage to whatever the debt is. They're collateral that you don't have authority over anymore. Something of yours is now a slave to something else. It makes sense if we think about it in there. Money can limit our options quite a bit. Because what do we know about slaves? If they want to grow or they want to serve or they want to give, they can't because their master is calling the shots. So something, if you're in debt, makes you a slave because you can't call all the shots. Even if the master lets you be fairly free, you're still like the genie in Aladdin. You've got those cufflink things on. And you can still be funny and goofy and everything like that. But when it comes to it, you can't leave the lamp and go do your own thing. You're still a slave to something else. You'll always be tied down to something. And to put it into terms that you might click with a little better, how many of you have ever borrowed money from your parents or loaned money to your kids? Did it change the relationship? Have anybody loaned or borrowed a significant amount of money? Usually a significant amount of money changes the relationship. A lot of times, maybe if you've paid a large sum of money to your children, you may not taste it, but they're going to have a different taste in their mouth when they're sitting at the Thanksgiving table. Because what's in their head is how they owe their parents, or something like that. Or sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes it's the person who loans the money is the one who gets the changed relationship. And it all depends. Usually it's the one more conscious and worried about money, or concerned about what happens to their money, is usually the one who's more upset. A Bankrate.com survey showed that 50% of those who borrowed money from a friend or family member saw that the relationship ended afterwards. That's over half. And 63% of people claim to have seen someone skip out on paying back loans to friends or family. And how do you think that would help the relationship if it doesn't get paid back? When you loan money to someone, even your children, it's not as big if it's a smaller amount, but a significant amount especially, you immediately change the relationship and family dynamic. The lender may not feel it, the borrower will, or sometimes reversed. One party will generally feel pressure, and quite often the other party doesn't even notice anything has changed, and sometimes it makes the party who feels the pressure act differently, and so this party is going to get upset because this one's now acting different and they don't know why, and it sometimes hurts relationships, and sometimes gets some stress added in there. How many of you have ever given $50 to someone who you knew needed it or some other amount like that, and then the next time you see them, their kids have like a new iPad or some other toy? And instantly in your head, you think, that jerk, I just gave them money and now their kid's getting new toys? Money can change relationships. Or have you ever been given $50 or some amount from someone and now you don't feel the same when you show your face around them because you maybe did buy something like a toy or something. You feel like they're going to judge you because of that, because they gave you money. The Bible is right. The borrower is a slave. They're not totally free anymore. And this principle is true regardless of who does the lending, whether or not it's a parent or a child, or it could be Visa or MasterCard or a school loan or an automobile loan. You're a slave in some component to whoever's doing the lending. When you borrow money, you're no longer free. Going back to our principle, the money expands and limits our options. You know that feeling when you get excited about something and you're like, yeah, let's do this, and then it hits you. I can't afford that. Or it might be something for fun, like a concert or a movie ticket, which for some reason now costs your firstborn child. But it could also be something deeper, like you really want to help someone, like your friend walks up to you and decides they're really called, they want to adopt kids. They're called to that, but they can't do it now because it's too expensive to do that and they don't have the money for it. Or what if you learn that your child's best friend, you know, can't afford a new pair of shoes? Or if you learn that someone you care about can't put food on the table? Are you the type of person who shines light into the darkness and steps up and just takes care of those things? Or are you someone who goes, I'd love to, but I can't afford to help you out in any way? Christians should be the ones who, when they hear of a need, go, wow, I wonder if God wants me to help with this need in the world that I see in front of me, instead of, wow, I really hope that God provides because I'm a slave and I can't be the one who helps here. We shouldn't have to be on that side. We should be the side of, when we're evaluating, does God want me to do this or not, instead of, can I afford this or not? When all of our money, though, has someone else's name on it, we have no resources. Money limits our options. And that's why I see in Exodus 22, 25, and Deuteronomy 23, 19, and Leviticus 25, 36, and many other places, you see God forbidding loans with interest within the kingdom of Israel. Because he doesn't want a nation of slaves. And that's why in Luke 6, 34 through 38, Jesus takes it even further. And he says, when you give money to someone, don't make it a loan. Don't expect it back. If you can handle the money being gone, just give it away. Don't loan it, just give it away. Money also expands our options too. Remember last week I mentioned that if you give a righteous person money, they've got that many more opportunities to be righteous with it. Money expands our options. And that brings us right into the next principle, and that is that money must be managed. Because if money expands and limits our options, while we sometimes can't control how much we have of it, we better be controlling the amount that we do have. And that is this thing called financial stewardship. And sadly, when you hear the word stewardship thrown around in churches, it usually means they're going to try to build a new building, or they're going to try and buy a piano, or they're going to try and do some special fund. That's usually what you think of when you hear the word stewardship. But the word steward has nothing to do with raising capital money. Steward is about managing money. Merriam-Webster defines steward as a person whose job is to manage the land and property of another person. Another definition is one employed in a large household or estate to manage domestic concerns, or a fiscal agent, or one who actively directs affairs. A steward isn't about raising money for church. A steward is about managing resources that aren't yours. A steward is kind of that old word that harkens back to the idea of knights and fealty when the king was gone, or when the king's dominion was too large for him to rule himself. A steward would be empowered to rule in his place. And those of you who've seen Lord of the Rings or read the books, you can think of this in the Steward of Gondor when Aragorn was off doing his ranger thing. There was a steward ruling in his place. And you notice in the Battle of Minas Tirith, he didn't do a great job, kind of jumped off the building. But that's a bad steward. We want to be good stewards of what we have because we're serving more than just a king. We're serving God. And that's a lot more important than just serving a king, because God's much more important than just a king. We're managing the property of the ultimate king. Whenever anything passes through our hands, it's God allowing that to happen. And so we better take care of those things. Throughout the Bible, we see this truth, but here's just one of those verses. Job 41:11, God says, "Who has first given to me that I should repay him? Whatever is under the whole heaven is mine." And the Bible's filled with verses like that. If you've heard the cattle in a thousand hills thing, that's God saying he's got the cattle in a thousand hills, and means he's got the cattle in every hill is basically what that's saying. He owns it all. He also owns the hills that the cattle's are on. God owns everything, and so anything we get anything, we're just being stewards and managers of it. So money must be managed because it's not ours. We don't just get to do whatever we want with it because it's a gift from God, and those of us who are wise enough to know that fact and are blessed to know that it's God's and not our own, we should handle it like it's God's and not our own. The Bible commands that we manage and are in control of our money. Proverbs 27:23 states, "Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds." Proverbs is a book about wisdom. It's a book of a guy basically sitting down at the end of his life saying, here's every single thing you possibly could hope to teach you before I pass on and you're the next person who has to make important decisions. And so it's all these good things like know the state of your flocks. And I know that it doesn't use the word money in that verse, but if you think about antiquity and ancient times, sheep equaled money. Like the bigger your flocks were, the wealthier of a person you were. And so know the state of your bank accounts is basically what it's saying. Know the state of your billing statements. The verse is saying pay attention to your assets. It's kind of like a dog. Now, I had a really cool dog when I lived in Tennessee. She was a great dog. We named her Einstein because we thought she was the opposite of Einstein. Turns out she was actually a really smart dog. She was half German Shepherd and half Malamute. Crazy intelligent dog, beautiful dog, except that there'd be tumbleweeds of hair going through my house within 2 minutes after I swept. And so the hairy thing was an issue. But she was a really intelligent, smart dog. But the problem was we had this big 2.5-acre yard that I could pretty much let her roam free in. I didn't have to put on her leash. I didn't have to put up a fence. She was smart. She knew where the boundaries were. We had a creek that ran through the property. She knew don't go past the creek. She knew not to enter the tree line. The only problem was that principle went out the window when she saw an animal somewhere. And we lived out in East Tennessee, and so there would be, occasionally it was really cool, we'd have like dozen to two or three dozen turkeys walk through our yard in any given time. And I knew that turkeys flew, but I cognitively didn't put that together until I saw them fly to get away from my dog. She's a big dog. Turkeys can fly. They're big birds, so it's funny to watch them fly. And so they'd run, and we also would, at one point, we went and looked out the back window, there were 70 deer in the field behind us, 70 or so. It was a cool place to live. But the problem was, if I let my dog out, not knowing there was an animal in the yard at the time, she just took off after the animal, and I have to spend the next 20 minutes walking through the woods yelling, "Einstein!" And so there wasn't always that much fun, but our finances are like a dog. Sometimes they're really well-behaved. Sometimes they're good little creatures. But when our wallets notice something that they think is worth chasing after, unless you've got it on a leash, it's just going to go. Our dollars are just going to fly after those things. Unless we put them on a leash, unless we manage them, unless we've got a fence up, we've got a leash on. Money management requires a leash. Money management requires a plan. I dare even say that money management requires a budget. In Luke 14, 28 through 30, Jesus tells us this: "For which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.'" Now, Jesus was talking about money there, but he really wasn't talking about money there. He was talking about the cost of following him. He was saying, count the cost before you want to be one of my disciples. Realize that it should take your whole life, that everything about you should go into following me. That's what Jesus is saying. But he uses this principle of money because that principle is still true. Which of you goes and tries to do something when they get halfway done with it? Everyone makes fun of you because you're only halfway done with it, is what Jesus is saying. You're supposed to count the cost. Good stewardship and good money management requires knowing what you're doing with it and counting the cost and even saving money. Proverbs 21:20 tells us, "The wise have wealth and luxury, but fools spend whatever they get." And so if you just spend every single thing that you have, the Bible, which is God talking, calls you a fool. So not me doing it, God's doing it. If you spend everything you get, if you spend every cent, or in America the average person spends more than everything they get, then the Bible's called you a fool. And so if you don't want your dollars to chase off after a coffee or a screwdriver or a steak or a new toy or a special phone or whatever it is in the woods that is this animal that your dollars want to chase, you need to put them on a leash. You need to get a plan. You need to become an adequate manager of God's resources. One question that makes me sit back and think, and I've got to check myself with this question often, is if you hired a treasurer for your life and you put them in charge of your bank accounts and everything like that, and they handled money the same way you handle your own money now, would you fire them? Most of the way that the average person handles money, if they were hiring someone to handle their money, they would probably want to fire them real quick. Because that's the way we do it a lot. I also saw a comic a few weeks ago of a person in their office job, and it's like, oh, we spent an extra 0.07% on pens this year. And then it flips to them at home, and it's, how much do you think we spend on groceries a week? About $50 or so? And it's that's the difference. If it's for some reason we're getting paid for it, it's we have to be more accurate. But what we're doing with ours, it's God's that's in our hands. We should be more accurate than when we're handling some company's money. It's God's money is what we should be worried about and conscious of what we're doing with it. Not just go, oh, I think that's what we do, but say, no, this is our resource and it's powerful. It expands or limits our options. It's a spiritual issue. It's spiritual warfare. I should be concerned about what's going on and know what's actually passing through my fingers. And so we need to get a plan. Because money is a spiritual issue. Money is extremely powerful. Money expands and limits our options. Money needs to be managed. And today it's the last Sunday where I'll push Financial Peace University, so don't worry about that if you're totally against it. But it's definitely not too late to sign up yet, because we all need a plan. And I encourage the plan that's within FPU. Ask anyone, And I ask anyone not yet participating to come and check it out tonight at 6 o'clock at the church or at the Wellington Clubhouse, or talk to me about the Wednesday night group. We've got a college group, too, that meets in the afternoons and the Sundays. And in Financial Peace University, you learn how to manage your money, how to communicate with your spouse about money, or to have, find some accountability if you're single, how to get out of debt, how to save for emergencies, how to plan for college and retirement, how to find the right kind of insurance, and ultimately how to change your family tree and find that new kind of normal. But even if you decide not to take Financial Peace University, it doesn't get you off the hook, for you still need a plan. Because it's not your money that you're dealing with. It's God's money, and how we use anything that God has given us is a spiritual issue. And so we should not take it lightly. We do need a plan. We do need to figure out what we're doing with it. And I'd love for us all to be on the same page and unified in what plan we're doing. That's why I'm wanting the whole church to do FPU. Last week, we can't even count the youth yet, who are going to do a similar but slightly different version of it. Not counting the youth even, we had over 60 people participate with Financial Peace University last week, which that's pretty cool. It's kind of over half of the adults, but we still, that's not everyone. I'd really love everyone to understand, hey, I need a plan. I need to get behind the fact that this is God's money. And if it's God's money, I'm just being a treasurer for him. And if I was a treasurer, would I fire myself? That's what we need to be worried about. Larry Burkett says, show me your checkbook and I'll show you your priorities. But Jesus said it first and he said it best, wherever your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Our bank statements are like a little window into our souls. And while they don't give the whole picture, they do a decent little job of it. And so what does your spending say about you? Does it say that you're a generous giver? Does it say you spend more than you make? Does it say that your children dictate spending? Does it say you live on a disciplined budget? Does it say that biblically you're a fool? Does it say you're biblically wise? Does it say that you have savings for emergencies and retirement? Does it say that if God called you, you'd be ready to help someone on a moment's notice? Does it say that you don't have any priorities, godly or self-serving, and you just do whatever you want and chase after whatever's moving in the woods? Does it say that you realize money is just a tool, and sometimes tools need to be kept well? Does it say that you understand God owns everything? Now, there's not necessarily one perfect plan or one perfect way to use all the resources that's one size fits all for everyone, but there are definitely some ways that are more right and some ways that are more wrong, and there's some principles that are timeless for everyone. Those are one size fits all, and so we should try and learn those principles and go after what is right and try and realize that it's God's resources. So please pray with me. God, I thank you for the fact that you have given us so much. Not even just money, but this church to come and worship in, this family to come and get to know, this world in which we live, is, even though it's got lots of problems, it's not too shabby sometimes. We thank you for your beautiful creation and all the things that you've blessed us with. Help us to be wise stewards of those things you give us. Help us to be people who, even if we've been given very little, be able to manage very little. And help us to be people, especially for those of us who you've given a lot, help us to manage the lots that you've given us. Help us to be people who realize it's yours and realize the things that you've put in our hands can be used as powerful weapons for the spiritual war that we fight. Thank you for winning the war, but help us to be able to withstand the battles that are still ongoing. And I pray this in Jesus' name, amen.